so serious.
All the toys, all the time.
I am the game, and still getting trying to play you.
You know the rules. This isn't a toy.
But we bought it at the toy store.
We did, but the way I'm using it makes it an adult thing.
Are you ready to play the game?
Yeah! Welcome to the toy department with Matt Kolsky and Derek Madden.
Yeah, yeah.
All right, welcome back. It's another edition of the toy department. I'm Derek Madden, and on the phone with me today, I feel like I should give you a fancy intro, like some big hypey intro.
Let's hear it.
And your master of ceremonies, your...
I changed my mind. I don't want it.
Yeah. All right. It's Matt Kolsky, everybody.
That was so anticlimactic. I know. Sorry, guys. A very special edition. Kolsky on the road.
That's right. It's such a big deal, the Kevin Durant news, that you are now traveling on location to talk to Kevin Durant. Is that what's happening right now?
Yeah, I mean, I think we have to, right? That's very toy department-y. I feel like I should make, like... Breaker 1-9 noises. We're on the scene. Kevin Durant, now a warrior. Jim, your thoughts?
Semi-serious question for our Bay Area listeners. Where do you think Kevin Durant is going to live?
Boy, that's a good question. I think a real boss move by Kevin Durant would be to live in Alameda. You know, Warriors complex is there. It's a little bit set off from Oakland, so you're not just like in it with the bourgeoisie, but you're right there in essentially the city where you play. Probably though, he ends up in like Concord or something, right? Walnut Creek, something like that.
Yeah, I could somewhere 925. He seems like a Lafayette maybe kind of
right
situation.
Yeah, just on the other side of the Caldecott Tunnel. This is becoming a very Bay Area specific podcast suddenly.
Didn't I read that Eminem is moving to Novato? That he really liked Novato for some random reason. So maybe Durant could move there, and like, we could start a rich people moving to Novato trend. I would enjoy that.
Oh yeah, there's no rich people in Novato before Eminem got there. Let's start the trend of wealthy people moving to Marin County in case no one's heard.
All right, that's probably the littlest aftershock from Katie's arrival in the Bay Area.
Where you gonna live? Yeah, I'd say that's pretty relatively speaking.
What do you want? Should we talk about this from the basketball angle first? Do we want to talk about I think the reactions to this are also very interesting. So which side of that you want to jump at first?
Maybe we just tackle the basketball first quickly, because there's still a lot to be determined there, and I think that's what becomes interesting about it. Much as we did when LeBron went to the Heat, we're already handing the Warriors the next, three championships, it sounds like, and the guy's only signed for 2 years. So one side of it, basketball-wise, is contract, which means he's actually potentially a free agent again a year from now, if, God forbid, something went horribly wrong. But also, just in order to sign him, the Warriors basically had to unload the entire team. You know, on the day where the Durant announcement is made, effectively the team you have is Steph Curry, Klay Thompson, Draymond Green, Kevin Durant, Andre Iguodala, and Sean Livingston, and that's basically it.
Yep.
They have added Zaza Pachulia, who is a very capable big man, underrated, I think.
I think that's an upgrade for them in terms of, the backup big man slot.
Right, except they don't have a starting one.
Well, I mean, they're going to start Green and Durant, right?
Okay, but then do you start Iguodala?
Yes, Iguodala moves back into the starting lineup in this configuration.
Well, I'm not sure if that's the way you want to go. I don't know if you can really defensively, that lineup has some serious issues. And I don't know if you want to subject Draymond Green and or Kevin Durant to the pounding they would take playing center all year. My starting lineup, actually, because so they've added Pachulia and David West so far, and I think you'll probably see a few more minimum contract deals, a few more ring-chasing veterans join the team. I think you have to start either West or Pachulia as it stands now, because I mean, look, a starting five of Curry, Clay, Iguodala, Durant, Green, that's scary. That's a scary five-man team, but that's not a team I want to start 82 games with. And it's also a bench of Livingston, West, and Pachulia is not really something to go to war with. I think you have to keep Iguodala on the bench if you can.
Well, all right, so they do, I think they like the draft pick from last year, whose name is escaping me.
Yep.
Kevon Looney, is that right?
Kevon Looney.
Yep. Isn't there's like a sports talk guy named Kevin Looney, isn't there?
There's Tom Looney.
Tom Looney. Oh yeah, that's what I'm thinking of.
Looney.
And then I think they like the kid they took this year out of Vanderbilt who plays center, right? So they're gonna have some
Damian Jones, but Looney though is more of a jump shooter. He's like 6'8", 6'9". He does rebound very well. But you know, he had a hip issue his entire rookie year, so I'm not sure how much you can count on him. And Damian Jones is the rookie out of Vanderbilt who, you know, it seems like they're just trying, he's sort of rookie Festus Ezeli all over again in some ways. But yeah, that's another big who can hopefully rebound and defend a little bit and is athletic.
I mean, look,
but
I still think
you got to keep Livingston can sort of be your bench captain, but I think you're better off with Iguodala there. And even if David West or Zaza Pachulia plays 15 minutes a game, I think they will end up starting one of those guys unless they get another center.
I just like, but the bottom line is, do you have any worry that they're going to be able to fill out the team with guys who will take less money to play there? Like, I don't. Like, I think they're going to have, I think they'll be a deep team. I realize there's, you know, basically eight guys on the roster that whose names you know currently. More will be coming. That's just, I think it's almost a certainty.
I think you're right. You know, I think there's a question, are those guys 31-year-old veterans with a point to prove, or are those guys Ray Allen, who is talking about coming back and may very well be able to help?
Wait, is that a real thing?
That's a real thing.
Oh, man.
He's reportedly looking at the Cavs and the Warriors, but I don't know how full regular season and playoffs. I just look. The Warriors are the title favorites, and for good reason. I do think they'll end up putting it hardly a done deal, and there's still a lot to figure out. Even if it's going, they're good problems to have. They're fun problems to have, but there are definitely some question marks. You know, the figuring out who your big men are and because you do still have to play big men sometimes in this league. There are still teams that can make you play big. And the Warriors will definitely try to chase some of those bigs off the floor.
What are those teams that can make you? Is Memphis, I guess, is one of those
Memphis,
teams?
The Spurs?
Yeah, I don't know that the Warriors felt like they had to go big against the Spurs in last year's configuration. I don't know.
No, but you add Pau Gasol. They got Pau Gasol, LaMarcus Aldridge, and Tim Duncan. They're going to be able to go with two capable bigs all the time if they want to.
I don't think they're going to have Tim Duncan.
What do you mean?
He's going to retire.
Oh. Well, I guess that's possible. It seems like he probably would have done it already.
But. No, there's the, you know, Woj is saying he's pretty much decided.
All right, well, even if they don't have Tim Duncan, they have two very good bigs that you're going to have to deal with that are probably going to play together a lot.
I'm not worried about them from a basketball standpoint at all. And I you know what I mean?
Really?
Yes. I would say it's not even question marks. I think they have inflection changes, you know?
Oh, you mean you're not worried about the Warriors?
Yeah.
No, worried would be the wrong word. But the West is – all I'm saying is – the West is still good, And they got to figure out how to run an offense with all this talent on it. And again, these are great issues to have. You'd much rather have them than not. But I'm just.
None of that offsets is that all of those open jump shots in the finals that were taken by Harrison Barnes are now going to be either taken by Kevin Durant or Klay Thompson.
Right. It's just not that easy, though, as you know.
Because on top of that,
about LeBron and Dwayne Wade and Chris Bosh, and it took them a year to get going.
As effective as the Draymond Green Steph Curry pick and roll was, like, Draymond Green is an okay shooter who you kind of have to respect.
You're going to run that
pick and roll with Kevin Durant, who is a lethal shooter who you must respect at all times, and it eliminates. I mean, you know, the teams figured out, like, okay, we can switch everything against Curry, and if we have the right personnel, that can work. And now you can't do that on a Durant Curry pick and roll because it's going to be a massive mismatch for somebody.
It's amazing to think about. I mean, it's going to be. I'm not saying it's not going to be fun. I'm not saying they're not going to have tremendous success, but there are some things to figure out. That's all I'm.
And I think the difference, right? The difference between the LeBron Wade Bosh thing was that you had two and a half really ball dominant players in that scenario. Whereas in this situation, I think Durant has been lusting to play in an offense that moves the ball like this one does. He's going from the team that literally passed the least in the NBA to the team that passes the most.
And it's
tailor made for him, I think.
I think ultimately that was probably a major deciding factor. Because thinking about if we want to kind of transition out of basketball to the actual mechanics of the decision, I think to me what jumped into my mind when I heard he had made this decision was the end of Game 6 of the Warriors-Thunder series. And I think that was the game. I think I have it right. Which was the game where Kevin Durant sort of played hero ball down the stretch and missed some big shots where he went ISO and not great shots, but pretty standard Kevin Durant shots and just didn't knock them down. The reason I thought of that is I don't think Kevin Durant dislikes Russell Westbrook. I think they're friends. I don't think he even hates playing with him. I think he did feel that in order for him to do anything down the stretch, in order for him to touch the ball down the stretch, he was going to have to take the ball and then go ISO. I think he had the feeling down the stretch of big game that if I give it up, I'm not getting the ball back.
That might be possible. And I think there's some pressure too of the notion of, I'm the leader, and he's a co-leader on that team, but I think the idea of being in a situation with the Warriors where, you know, yes, some guys may be kind of better than others, but now you have five guys out there, in crunch time, who can take the shot. And no one's going to mind. No one cares which guy is the guy that takes the shot. It's just the guy who has the best shot. I think that idea, you know, obviously I'm speculating on Kevin Durant's mindset, this guy who would know it all. But what I've read, it seemed like that idea might be really appealing to him. I think he liked, you know, Steph Curry sent him a text the night before saying, you know, I want to win. Yeah. I don't care. If you're the MVP, I'll be in the front row. And I think Durant probably feels similarly. Let's go get rings. You know what I mean?
I think so too. But what I'm saying is there's two sides of that. There's the I don't want to be the guy that's thought of as he has to take the last shot. But I don't know if it's as much that. I think it's in the idea that anyone can take the last shot is the idea that the ball will move to the person in the best position to shoot that shot.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Yeah.
No, I know, but I think the situation on the Thunder, it wasn't that, I have to take the last shot for Kevin Durant. It was that, either Durant or Westbrook could end up taking the last shot, the chances that that shot would be the best available shot were much lower. Because if Russ had it, Russ was shooting it. And he didn't really care if it was a good shot or not. And I think Durant kind of turned into that player, but felt like he had to play that way as well in order to contribute his end-of-game whatever. And now, maybe he will still take the last shot. But you can have confidence, or more confidence, that whoever does end up taking that shot, it'll be the right one, instead of whoever has the ball with 10 seconds left on the shot clock and just decides to keep it.
Yeah. How, in your mind, and I think we still want to get to the point too of super teams and the morality there, which I think seems to be a thing that people are focused on. But you know, from a basketball standpoint, do you see anyone that can beat this team? I mean, you have to put Cleveland in that category. I just don't know that the Spurs can score enough, you know, and then you've decapitated. I mean, look, I think it's going to be fascinating to see the, you know, quote, Pulp Fiction, great vengeance and furious anger that Russell Westbrook plays with this season. I think that's going to incredible. And he may wind up winning the MVP. That would not shock me at all.
No, not at all. I mean, I think if I had to make odds for MVP, he'd be my favorite.
But I don't know that I see I don't know that I see and I look, the Thunder still have some really good pieces. I like the moves that they've made this offseason, you know, Durant notwithstanding. But I don't see them as a threat to win the West, do you?
No.
It's just it's
nah.
Yeah, I mean it looks like we're headed towards Cleveland Golden State part 3.
Yes, and that would be thrilling, and I do think, you know, Cleveland, first of all, they may still have a move to make. And second of all, they can challenge. You know, I mean, it'll be interesting. And the other thing I would say and caution people is one injury and we're all back to a muddle and not knowing who the best team is.
Right. So, and there will be an injury.
Yeah, all this hand-wringing and, oh, this is unfair, this ruins basketball is pretty over the top as far as I'm concerned.
All right, can we talk about that? So,
yeah.
All right, so we're running into a season in which, you know, two, maybe three teams you figure probably have a shot to win the title. And I do understand that can have a diminishing effect on a long regular season. I get that. But it's really hard for me to buy this argument that it's bad for the game to have these mega teams. Particularly when, you know, the leading ownership voice against these super teams is the owner of one of the current super teams, right? So, yep. The game has never been healthier or popular, which is essentially more popular, which is essentially what allowed this to happen. It's really always been a game, you know, run by teams, by a couple of teams at a time, and it's
always.
And you know, the major rise in prominence happened when you had the Lakers and the Celtics and maybe one other team, be it the Rockets or the Sixers or whoever, that kind of snuck into that picture. And then, you know, when Jordan's Bulls essentially dominated the league and you didn't, you know, it was just going to be, who were they going to beat in the finals? Like people liked that.
Yes. People love it. And people, you know, haters and people who are sad that their team is not a super team say these things about, it's complete revisionist history. People say these things about, oh, well, you know, it was never any fun when Jordan's Bulls were ruling. You always just knew they were going to win. That's not true. The league exploded in popularity at that time.
Mm-hmm.
People loved watching it. Jordan and Jordan's Bulls had fans not just all around the country, but all around the world. This game is about great teams. It always has been.
And I can speak to the other side of that as someone who hated those teams. That was fun too. You know? It was fun to you know, try to hope that somebody could beat them. Like, ah, the Suns got Barkley, you know, and they're fun. Maybe these are the guys that could do it. You know what I mean? Like, that was great, too. Or the Sonics team that came up and challenged them, you know. Karl Malone and John Stockton, you know, maybe this is their year. By the way, but Jordan pushed off in that game. Still makes me mad.
Of course he did. Just doing his job.
You know, it's yeah. I think look, people want that, and like seeing what these guys can do are fascinating. And we literally just went through this lesson, and
exactly
what drives me crazy is people who say, "Oh, Jordan would have never," or "Magic would have never," or "Bird would have never." You know, first of all, you know, Bird and Magic came into the league in these crazy ideal situations. By the way, Magic wouldn't enter the draft until he knew the Lakers were going to draft him. And he got to play with Kareem right away. He won a title by his second year.
Yeah.
Like, if he'd come into the league on a mediocre team, he would have left to join a good one. Do you think Larry Bird was complaining that he got to play with Parrish and McHale and Dennis Johnson and Danny Ainge and that they were able to add Bill Walton? Do you think he was upset when they had fleeced a team to draft Len Bias and he thought, here's a guy who's going to be like, no, he loved it, you know?
More to the point, do you think the personality of Larry Bird even would have tolerated 9 years of playing for this Thunder team the way things have gone? He'd have been gone 3 years ago. You've got to be kidding. We know about Larry Bird. He's a psychopathic competitor. He didn't want to play for a team whose ceiling was Western Conference Finals defeat. Give me a break.
It's ridiculous. You know who else was a psychopathic competitor who was addicted to winning, who would be happy to stack a team in his favor? Michael Jordan.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Like, literally everything we know about Michael Jordan indicates that he would have loved to play with a bunch of great players, you know?
Michael Jordan is the dude at the pickup court who can win with the four worst players on the court. He can beat everybody out there with the four worst players, and yet he stacks his team with the four best players and beats you 15 to nothing.
Right.
That's who Michael Jordan is.
And if it really was the first player guy to be very involved in the personnel decisions of his team, I feel like, right? In terms of, you know, like saying, you need to bring in this guy and you need to bring in that guy. And look at his high school experience, right? As a senior, right? You know, picking, you know, where he wanted to play college ball. You don't think the idea of, oh, I can go here and play with Jordan or with Worthy and Perkins. Or I could be at the Citadel. You know what I mean? Like, come on. Of course he's going to play with the good players. That's what people do.
And you've got idiot screaming talking heads saying, oh, this is such a weak move. I've never seen a superstar do something like this. When we literally just saw a superstar do something like this 5 years ago.
Well, and the insanity of, you know, people making these criticisms when in their own life they want nothing more than to work for the best people on the most successful teams that they can be on for the most money that they can. You know what I mean?
Exactly.
There's a reason that Stephen A. Smith doesn't work for the Philadelphia Daily News anymore. Or for Fox Sports, I might add.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Or that he's not just the guy hosting a radio show. When Stephen A. Smith had the opportunity to go on First Take and scream things he doesn't believe for lots of money, I guarantee you nobody was like, what do you mean, bro? You're a radio host. You do sports talk radio. Like, stick with it. Where's your loyalty? Get out.
Yeah.
Stop it.
And like, literally, how much is enough? Like, is Kevin Durant like bound to play in this one city his entire life because he's good? Like, I don't understand it. You know what I mean? Like, he played there 9 years. Like,
9 years.
He signed an extension when he didn't have to, with no opt-out. Like, what does he owe anybody?
He specifically gave them extra, more of his time. They got extra more of his time without ever having to bid for it or do anything challenging to get it. He has already gone above and beyond to try to help the Thunder succeed. you heard everyone talk about, and I don't think it's anything less than 100% sincere. You heard everyone talk about how great he's been in the community, how much a part of the Oklahoma City culture and life and helping them with, you know, hurricane relief and everything. Everything he's done stands up to the test of, is this guy doing the right thing? And the idea that it is anyone's business to criticize, and again, the criticisms don't even make sense, because if he does something for just money, everyone's upset he's doing it for money. How come he doesn't want to win? Why isn't winning the most important thing? Oh, these athletes today.
Mm-hmm.
And now he does something where the only explanation, every other aspect, okay, I guess there's like life in the Bay Area versus Oklahoma City, but these guys live other places in the offseason anyway, so that's a very small issue. The real thing is his only motivation was championship. He's doing the thing that quite obviously puts him in the best position to win championships, and you literally have people criticizing him saying he should put himself in a harder situation to win championships because that's like, that fits my moral compass better.
You remember yes. when Ouch. Carmelo like had that sort of opportunity to go to the Bulls, and
yes.
everyone
and
criticized him. Yeah,
yes.
Why don't you want to win championships, Carmelo? City.
Exactly. Yeah.
Like,
these guys can't win. Is the simple fact is they cannot win.
And I think they're on to that game. You know what I mean? Like they know that they are ready to just not listen to the noise. And I'm not saying that Kevin Durant is not sad that he's going to go back to Oklahoma City and get booed a couple times a year. Like, that'll bum him out. But I think for the most part, he's literally not at all worried about what the Stephen A. Smiths of the world have to say. Speaking of which,
because Stephen A. Smith told him like 6 months ago, you do not want to make an enemy of me. So, are you sure he's not concerned?
I've been thinking about this actually, and I'm curious as to what you think. Like, if you were like, let's just say you were an elite professional athlete. You know what
all
I mean?
All right, I'm into it.
You're an NBA All Pro.
Yep.
Would there be something worthwhile in literally just trying to make an enemy out of Stephen A. Smith, like going out of your way to just clown the guy at like every opportunity, just like viciously taking him apart at every turn? I think you'd be a hero to America, right?
Yes. It would be a horrible waste of your time, though.
No, but it's not like you need to be like, I don't know that it would be like, you're going to do the press conference after the game anyway. So why not just, you know, just drop in a jab at Stephen A. Smith at every press conference? You know what I mean?
I mean, again, outside of having to pay enough attention to him to know what the appropriate jab is, like, if I'm Kevin Durant, I'm not willing to watch First Take to find out what he's saying to call him stupid.
Well, but that's what you have an entourage for, right?
Yeah.
You have someone watch it and tell you what
true.
He said.
I might have one of my boys watch it and just give me the five dumb things he says every day.
Do you think it would make does it give Stephen A. Smith more power? Because I do think you could just fundamentally undercut him. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You could freeze him out. Like, there's a lot of things that you could do to just be like, we're not putting up with your ass anymore.
Well, I think it's quite obvious that he has been frozen out by Kevin Durant. It's the only explanation for this petulant behavior. I mean, honestly, what other reason could there be for Stephen A. Smith to continually hardline against one of the, by all accounts, nicest and certainly one of the best players in the entire NBA?
Right. Well,
I mean, one of the guys, a generational talent, someone who has maximized that talent for the most part in his career, someone who has been exemplary on and off the floor in almost every situation. What other reason could there be to go so hard at this guy?
Well,
obviously angry that he doesn't have a source inside Kevin Durant's, you know, people.
Well, the other reason would just be like, you know, that's going to be the road less traveled and the route to maximum attention, right?
Yeah, that's
the Occam's razor of that situation, actually, right?
Yeah, like that's probably true.
I can just lay it. I can be the king of Contrarian Hill here. And people like us will talk about him. And that's the thing is, like, I go back and forth between, like, you know, it'd be nice if someone would actively destroy him, or maybe just the best medicine is to just be like, okay, Stephen A., and go on about your day. You know what I mean? But you know.
I would love it so much if Kevin Durant just started at every press conference, just started saying things like, well, you know, I am such a weak superstar, so I have to assume they just let me get 35 and 12 tonight. Because, you know, I watch First Take, and I'm the weakest superstar in the history of the NBA. Yeah. So it couldn't just be that I'm better than them.
just agree with everything. Be great.
Yeah. Just start agreeing with everything Stephen A. Smith says and like, talking about it a lot and, like, pretending to be disappointed. Like, Kevin, you guys are 33-0, and you're averaging 28 points a game on 16 shots. It seems like you're doing pretty well. Well, yeah, you know, I mean, I am scoring, and my rebounding and assist numbers are higher than they've ever been. But, you know, I'm an incredibly weak superstar, and I'm afraid I don't want to get too excited about my success because I'm afraid I might make an enemy of Stephen A. Smith.
Yeah. Do you look at Twitter trending topics ever, like just the trending topics on the side of the screen there?
Not really. Am I doing it wrong?
No, you don't have to. In fact, sometimes I think you may be better off. It's like, there are certain signals now, though. It's like, if I see a certain person, certain kind of person in the trending topic, my first assumption is, oh crap, they just died. And then,
then
there's another kind of person where it's like, oh crap, they said something stupid. You know what I mean? There's a third kind of person, like usually like the Kanye One Direction, where it's just, oh crap, they said something, period. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah, like it's sort of interesting when you see names, you know. You know, you're already getting first impressions. I didn't know if that was a thing for you. Speaking of names and people who can light up Twitter, I went to Adele last night.
Ooh.
I have now been on the other side, and I can say hello to you from there. Okay. First show of the US tour last night, and
So tours start in Minnesota these days. That's a thing.
Yeah, I guess one of the things I've discovered about living here is Minnesota is a bad route, you know, as like touring things go.
Yeah, it's not really on the way to anything.
Yeah, exactly. So it's you know, unless you're like you're sort of on the way to Canada, but like the closest cities are really like Milwaukee and Chicago, and it's like Salt Lake and Denver to the west, which are like long ass treks. So we get skipped over for a lot of stuff, or you just put us at the start or the end of something. You know what I mean? I guess
it's kind of
how it works. But she started the tour here, and I gotta say, like I enjoy Adele, and it's hard for me to be passionate about her records because they're, you know, kind of middle of the roadie, I sort of feel like.
I think the big one was not, but okay.
Yeah, I would say you're right. The big one is not. The new one is a little bit more middle of the road. That's fair. But man, when you go and watch her perform and you realize she's not really like doing much. But the force of her voice and her personality and then kind of just the accoutrements of the show, like that is a hell of an entertainment experience. Like she, first of all, just kills it live. Like the vocals are tremendous and effortless. Like the voice is everything that you think it's going to be. The stage production and the band are top notch. And she's really funny in a really effortless, approachable way. And she can do things like, oh, I'm going to bring three people up on stage and chat with them for a minute. And, oh, you're part of a family. And, oh, your mom and dad are here? Hey, bring them up too. Let's all take a selfie. And it's all in a way that was like super natural and like genuine. There was a moment where she like found a fan in the crowd from Australia and was like, hey, I'm going to tour Australia. You should give me your info and I'll make sure you get to the shows. And then she realized like, oh wait, we haven't announced that yet. And the people are going to hear this. So she had to sort of like backtrack on that. And like, you know, she told this great story about dropping F-bombs at Glastonbury and how many she did. And it's okay, 'cause she's not letting her vagina out all over the place. It was just like, like all these things that you don't, it made me realize that carpool karaoke bit was really ideal showcase for her.
Yeah.
Because she's just a fun chick, you know?
Right. I think that's one of the coolest parts of Adele is so many of the, because it's usually women, so many of the women who have these voices are these pristine, sort of untouchable. Even Whitney Houston, as she descended into crack addiction, cut this imposing figure, this sort of untouchable queen vibe. And Adele brings it right. I mean, you know, Celine Dion is sort of a predecessor of hers, like this. And I also don't care for Celine Dion's music, but just from a diva, big voice standpoint, Adele's not only making music that's a little more accessible and interesting, she's also just a more accessible and interesting person.
Yep.
And I, you know, this is an awkward analogy for obvious reasons, but I think in a lot of ways, she's what we wanted from Amy Winehouse.
Yeah.
She's a down-to-earth chick who just happens to have this earth-shattering, undeniable, incredible voice, and it seems capable, despite the sort of built-in pretension that often comes with that sort of position in the culture, she seems totally unbothered by that. And it's cool.
It makes her
endearing.
Really cool.
It makes her lovable.
I think her willingness, too, to kind of drop off the radar for 3 or 4 years probably benefits just her state of mind. And I think that's something that I think Mariah Carey or, you know, Christina Aguilera or certainly Britney Spears, you know, not that they're the same kind of diva. I think they would have had a real hard time with that idea of getting off of the roller coaster for long enough, or the people around them had a hard time with that idea.
I do think Mariah and Christina are similar, you know, in terms of the ability and the position they had in the culture. Britney can't sing like that, but Mariah and Christina both have incredible voices, but they both, their personas are just more untouchable. They're more diva-esque. They're more, and you know, I think Christina has probably navigated it a little better than Mariah, but neither of them have that quality of like, we could go grab a beer and chill and it would probably be a good time.
I agree with that. And I do think that there's, you know, it's something maybe people didn't know that they were missing it, but I think when you see it, it's so refreshing to just see. It really does warm the heart over. And I know that's a tough ticket for people to get, but I would definitely recommend the Adele concert experience if you can figure out a way to get in there and do it.
Yeah, and you know, putting aside the fact that she's very endearing, seeing a talent like that, you know, it's not unlike getting that ticket to go see Steph Curry and Klay Thompson do their thing. It's getting to witness generational talent. And that's something that we should all just always celebrate.
Yep.
When we have people capable of greatness at levels like this, it should be something we can all enjoy.
Yeah, not to get back to the other thing, but like, it's just hard for me to imagine like not being excited to see what that collection of players can do. Like, you feel like there's
right.
a potential to just elevate the way the game can be played. And who wouldn't be excited about that? It's so weird to stake out an opposite position of, this makes me, I can't wait to root against these guys. Like, I don't know.
Yeah. Even if I can't wait to root against these guys was your position, you still should be unable to wait to watch them, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Well, and I think we're going to find that people, whether they admit it or not, will really feel that way. And then,
oh, no doubt.
Yeah.
No doubt. They're about to bust some ratings records in a big way.
It's going to be interesting to see if they can find reasons, right? Because the Warriors went way over their max number of national TV games last year. They were just on these sort of streaks and records where they got sort of special permission to get the games on NBA TV or ESPN or whatever.
Yep.
I wonder if they'll be able to top that number next year.
Yeah. Boy, it's going to be exciting. It's
going to
be really exciting.
So, I gave you some homework last week.
Yeah.
Watch Roadies.
I am nothing if not a good student. I do my homework.
Did you find that really exciting?
Man, Okay. So I came to this, worried is the wrong word, but
trepidatious,
skeptical.
Maybe.
Yes, skeptical, because Cameron Crowe's best work is some of my favorite stuff. I think when he was hitting, he had some of the best hits, man. I think he understands movie making, but I also think he just has a great sense of human being.
Yeah.
And obviously of music. And so, on one hand, I was worried because we haven't seen the greatness of Cameron Crowe much lately. On the other hand, I was very excited because the marriage of music and regular people is where he's had his greatest success in Almost Famous, if you ask me.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's what this is, and I knew almost nothing about it, besides Luke Wilson and Carla Gugino, who are two of my favorite actors, were in it. And now Imogen Poots is also one of my favorite actresses, because she's just so unbelievably lovable and endearing. And I have to say, while there might be some issues, I'm totally in. I'm totally in.
I'm glad to hear that. I'm willing to go along for the ride, and I feel the same way. Like I haven't tossed aside the trepidation. There are some moments of cheese in the show, but there's enough.
Oh, man. From the very beginning, there's some incredible cheese, and there are some lines where someone says or does something. And I think just because of the nature of entertainment in 2016, I'm waiting for the other, like, sarcastic shoe to drop, and it never does. It's just sincere. And that's still a little weird and I don't think ideal. But the characters are fun. I already love some of the relationships that are going on. And again, he does, Cameron Crowe, have this ability to put these actors and characters in situations where you fall in love with them.
Yep. And you know, yes, there's some dialogue that's cringeworthy, but there's also some dialogue where you just are like, oh, that's beautiful, you know?
Yeah.
And you're going to get enough of those moments, I think, in every episode to make you want to see more, you know?
Oh, and by the way, I discovered my new favorite band on episode 2.
Really?
Did you know Rain Wolf was real?
Yes, I've seen Rain Wolf, and it is they're compelling as hell live, which I think is...
Oh, my God, yeah. That dude is a beast. I was like, man, as I was watching it, I was like, man, this fake band is awesome. I wonder if they have other songs. And then I looked it up afterwards, and I was like, oh, this is a real band. And I spent 30 minutes listening to Rain Wolf. The dude's just a blues magician on the guitar, and he's a total nut. I'm fired up about Rain Wolf.
Yep, and there's going to be, there's going to be a real band, I think, in pretty much in every episode. Head and the Heart were the band in the first one.
That was hilarious. They had a hilarious little sort of turn with the Head and the Heart. I mean, it's a really lovable show.
And I'm glad. The guy deserved to make something. And I know critics, the critical reaction's been mixed, I would say at best. But honestly, I think that's a lot of people who want to flog him for Aloha and We Bought a Zoo and whatever.
Right. You know? And he probably deserves a light flogging for We Bought a Zoo. I mean, let's be serious.
I don't think I ever actually wound up seeing We Bought a Zoo.
Of course you didn't. Neither did I. No movie named We Bought a Zoo should ever have been made. Like, literally, when the preview for that came on, as the preview was getting to the end, I was like, well, it doesn't look great, but who knows? And then it was like, We Bought a Zoo. And I was like, no, not at all. Not seeing it.
Yeah. I am looking at Metacritic, okay. And they are a 47 out of 100, which is decidedly meh reviews for Roadies.
For Roadies?
Yeah.
Huh.
Killed in Entertainment Weekly, of all places.
Really?
And it's funny.
So upset about.
I said on the show last week that I thought this was sort of Cameron Crowe's Studio 60.
Uh-huh.
The EW called it Cameron Crowe's The Newsroom.
Okay.
Which, depending on, I guess, how you feel about The Newsroom, is a shot.
Well, I did have the thought while watching the first two episodes that in a way this show is just fan service for a fan base that doesn't necessarily exist. Like, not that people won't like it, but it's like, you know, we talk about shows that have been on for 5 years doing things that are fan service to the audience they've developed, and this show doesn't have an audience yet, and it already feels a little bit like fan service in some ways. So I guess I get that, but maybe I'm just the right audience for it, because to me it's very enjoyable. There's not much to it so far, and I think it's somewhat predictable. You can kind of see where certain things are going. I mean, look, when your premiere episode, the main character spends the majority of the episode debating whether or not to stay on the show, essentially. Like, you know she's going to stay on the show. This is not setting up the pilot is not going to spend 35 minutes with someone who's not going to be in the show anymore.
Right.
So like, it's not unpredictable. It's not going to super surprise you. But again, it's just enjoyable. And sometimes for me, that's enough.
Yep. Yeah, no, and it's the perfect time of year for something like that.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Where, you know, it's nice to have something sort of light and summery and not feeling like, oh, my God, if I don't see Rhodey's the night that it airs, that, you know, that everyone's right. going to be talking
I'm
about it tomorrow
out.
And it's going to be ruined, you know? Like,
yeah.
It's okay. I can go out and do stuff and then maybe catch up at some point. But
yeah,
I do.
There's no fear about missing out on the cultural conversation happening tomorrow because you didn't see yesterday's episode of Rhodey's.
I do recommend, if you're listening to this podcast, I'm guessing you're the type of person who really is the audience that might be fan-serviced by this show.
Yeah, I think that's fair to say. And again, like, it sounds like it might be critical to say there's not much to it, it's just an enjoyable, entertaining show, but like, isn't that really... If the goal is to be an enjoyable, entertaining show, and you're an enjoyable, entertaining show, is it fair to criticize you for not being deep enough or not being difficult enough? Like, I think the show is achieving its aim.
Yeah, no, I would agree. I agree. It's not aiming high, and it's hitting that.
Yeah.
So watch it. So watch it. Is there anything, because we should probably get going, is there anything you'd like to assign me?
Man, well, did you catch up on Preacher at all? Because I have to say, that show, to me, keeps getting better. And I think while there's definitely this mystical aspect that's running through it, it's mostly about great characters and sort of hilarious interpersonal relationships. And as the character, the sort of three main characters of Jesse the Preacher, the British vampire guy Cassidy, and the sort of one of the lead females, Tulip, as this relationship develops, I think it's just incredibly engaging. I guess if you're looking for something a little more difficult but still very entertaining compared to Rhodey's, Preacher is just, I think it's really good, man. I really think it's good.
I just, you know, I've actually been thinking a lot about this because I listened to another podcast that was just raving about the show, but not raving about it in a way that made me want to watch it necessarily. And I really did not like the pilot. I just was not entertained. Enough people do that I respect like the show that, you know, and rave about performances that I guess I should check it out and give it another shot. I've heard also that the second episode in particular was really good, and I'm just really not excited about it. It really does feel like homework. It just doesn't move me emotionally.
Here's homework we should both do then, because I have not yet, but I keep being told I should, and that is the new HBO miniseries.
The Night of? Oh, yeah. I'm excited about that.
So why don't we watch the pilot of The Night Of and report on that next week?
All right. I can do that. You guys should do that, too.
All right.
I think we can wrap that up with this week. Thank you guys for hanging, and we'll be back in the toy department soon.
All right. Bye.
This game's in the Admiral refrigerator. The door is closed. The light's out. Butter's getting hard, the eggs are cooling, and the Jell-O is jiggling.
So long, everybody.
And do me a favor, have yourself a tremendous evening.